A quick hello and we're good to go. Welcome to the show, Federico Valayaso.
Well, I'm being serenaded. I'm a bad singer. The only singing I've recently done was Gen AI generated.
Oh,
yes.
How did that turn out?
Much better than if I sing myself. It was actually quite fun. So I don't know. We'll put it online. But for people who haven't seen it, I took a photo of myself. I turned it into kind of like a Barbie / Ken version.
Wow.
And then so I had a static image and then I had the face animated with the lips singing to a song that I had written using GPT. And then I can't remember which software I got to actually do the vocals. But I kind of like put 4 or 5 pieces of Gen AI together and I got myself singing a song and looking like Ken from the Barbie movie.
Oh, brilliant. Right. So what we have to do is share that in the links below so that people can go and see it. That sounds like a lot of fun. And I'm now immediately thinking, I was walking down the street and I was doing a swing version of Christmas songs. And swing is this really weird thing. It's slightly out of time all the time, but to human ears, it sounds incredibly groovy. Can a machine swing?
And how did it do?
I don't know. I've never tried it.
You're asking me if a machine can swing. Yeah, machines can do a whole lot more. Well, I mean, I read this great quote in the Wall Street Journal, and it was basically someone saying that we've come to the day and age where giving the answer of, I can't do this, that's no longer a valid answer. It's just now the answer is, I haven't done this yet. So if you're asking like, hey, can you go and sing a song and can you swing? I haven't done it yet. I haven't tried it, but I'm sure it's possible. So it's just a matter of us all trying it now, right?
Brilliant. Ooh, yeah. Okay. So a whole new world opens up to us. But before that whole new world, talking about how generative AI is changing PPC, with particular emphasis on how PPC is going to fit into the generative AI results on Bing and Google, or is already fitting in. Before all of that, we're going to talk about brand SERPs knowledge panels. And of course, I've got your knowledge panel. Absolutely beautiful. You have a delightful knowledge panel. It's got the follow-up questions from generative AI. It's got your books. The description comes from Google Books. Google Books is a dominant source for knowledge panels. So if you have a Google Books description of yourself, it will tend to dominate. And it's very difficult to replace it with anything else. Your only hope is that question mark at the top, your entity home, which is your own website, personal website that you own, that Google looks to for information about you from you. So I would advise you here to create an entity home in order to be able to dominate your own knowledge panel and control what's there. And the great thing about Google Books is up until 2 weeks ago, we didn't know how to change descriptions in knowledge panels via Google Books. 2 weeks ago, we figured it out. Now we can change the description in the knowledge panel via Google Books. Sounds perhaps simple, but it's actually a neat trick that we learned to play. And secondly, your company, Optimizer. And the generative AI results look really good. And yet, people also ask, what does Optimizer do? So at one side, it understands. And on the other side, it's got this question of what do you do, which to me at least suggests Google doesn't really know. So I haven't analyzed it, but that's an interesting thought. And then over there on the right, you've got your Google Business profile. I would suggest you would really want a knowledge panel to make Optimizer look even more professional than we all know it is currently. How does that sound?
That sounds like a great advice and something I hadn't really looked at. I think about branding like the way of thought leadership and making sure that people know. And so it's a little sad, of course, when people don't know what Optimizer does. And just for the folks watching today, so we're a PPC management software suite, award-winning. So at least now you know. But yeah, that was super helpful. And the only question that I would have is like, do I need a Wikipedia page? Is that going to help
me? I would advise against a Wikipedia page. If you get a Wikipedia page, number one, it takes anything from 6 months to a year. It needs to go through that whole process. You need to be notable in a Wikipedia sense, which means national press. That probably isn't the case. If you then try to do it and they will simply delete it, if the Wikipedia page is created, then deleted, Google gets really confused and you set yourself back by about a year. And the other thing, of course, is you're handing over your personal branding and your company branding to anonymous Wikipedia editors. Who would want to do that? And fact is, we've been creating knowledge panels without Wikipedia for 6 years now at CaliCube. So it's always been possible. Now it's not only possible, but it's by far the vast majority of knowledge panels do not have a Wikipedia page behind them. Thank you for asking that very leading question.
Yeah, I didn't know you were going to be happy with that question, but I really did want to know. It feels like maybe it's one of these vanity things where everybody at some point in life wants to own a restaurant and then realizes it's like a huge, like it's so difficult. And I know you're a chef, right? So is that like an aspiration that you've ever had?
No, well, I'm not really a chef. I'm a stay-at-home chef who enjoys it, who isn't actually professional. But I did have a Wikipedia page, and it was deleted because I edited it too much. And it wasn't that I wasn't notable, because I am. I was in a music group. I did a TV series that was shown around the world with ITV International. So notability wasn't the problem. The problem was I kept going in and editing it to see what Google would do when I edited the Wikipedia page. Yeah. And then the editors came in and said, "You're editing it too much." They just deleted every single reference to me. I had three Wikipedia pages for three different projects, and they just deleted them all out of pure spite, as far as I can see.
And I think that's so interesting, because we have the same problem. So we have a PPC management software, and in us trying to figure out, like, what can we do differently? How can we optimize better? We're always in our account, and like, we probably have one of the worst PPC accounts ever, because my engineers are constantly breaking it. They're constantly like, "Oh, there's a new feature. Like, let's." And then Google gets massively confused, and then the engineers sort of leave their testing campaigns around. They forget to pause them or delete them, and then somebody else comes in, and it's like,
right.
But and I hear the same thing. Like, so many SEO and PPC companies, like, their own PPC, their own SEO is broken. And it's not, like you said, it's not because we don't know how to do it, but it's because we're always trying to push the envelope a little bit more.
That's a really interesting point. I mean, we're experimenting constantly, but what I've done is created multiple entities that I can practice on without anybody seeing. So I can practice on it and nobody ever notices. Yeah. So our branded searches and our knowledge panel for myself and the company are actually very good, because we are trying to sell our own services by saying, look what we can do for ourselves, look what we do for our clients, we can do this for you. But you're right. The danger is you experiment on yourself and it all goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, no, maybe that's a good idea. And you talk a lot about entities, I think.
Yeah.
And so we always come at it thinking about Optimizer as the company, as the software, as the entity that we're trying to pitch. And of course, in PPC, the other distinction is, like, every experiment costs real money, right? And especially if you're in a competitive industry, we're talking a couple dollars per click here. So we want to be a bit cautious, but it's interesting, because I could think about myself as the entity and actually start running ads for myself, I guess.
Yep, no, 100%. I mean, and in fact, you've got three entities. You've got yourself, you've got the company, and you've got the software. That's three different entities that we would work on at CaliCube. You are listening to Branded Search and Beyond with Jason Barnard. Now, back to the show. But yeah, I mean, doing experiments from PPC, absolutely, I have no advice to give you at all, because it's absolutely not my fun playground to play in or advise on. But that's your specialty, which is why you're here, which is the most beautiful segue into how generative AI is changing PPC.
Yeah, I mean, so generative AI, and really when we think about generative AI, most people think about the introduction of ChatGPT, which is almost exactly a year ago to the day. It was late November. And it really, Microsoft was interestingly the leader in that. So ChatGPT came out by itself, right? So the early days, I had questions like, oh my God, is ChatGPT going to be the thing that replaces the search engine that we all know and love and trust, Google? And so it was like, well, you know, it's hallucinating quite a bit. So sure, it writes nicely, but can we really trust what comes out of it? And then we saw that next step of evolution where Microsoft was taking their search results and putting a generative component at the top. Mm. And now, a little bit surprisingly to me, because Microsoft is not the number one in search in the world or in the United States or anywhere. But they got a really conservative approach to how they put generative on that page. Whereas Google was like, they came in with Bard and they were like, okay, boom, the whole top half of your screen, it's generative, right? All the organic results, the paid results, it's all being pushed to the bottom. Because they seem more willing to massively disrupt how people engage with the page.
Brilliant. No, and we're going to come to the you just said the ads pushed to the bottom, so we come back to that. But there are a couple of things that strike me there. Number one is the hallucinations. People were, obviously, it's because the language models are simply predicting the next word and they don't fact check. But in generative AI in Google, you now get multiple facts that are checked in the knowledge graph, especially the date of founding of a company or the date of birth of a person. And instead of citing a source, it cites its own source, which is the knowledge graph. That was point number one. Point number two is, I think one of the reasons that Google could be so ambitious so quickly is because the knowledge panel cards that we see here on your, this is just a knowledge panel, that's not generative AI per se. That's been around for 2 years or more. And that was their first implementation of generative AI as knowledge panel cards for people as part of the knowledge panel. So they've been working on this idea, as far as I can see, for a couple of years. So it was easier for them than it was for Bing to just throw this out there. That's the theory, and I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I was at Google in 2002 until 2012, so a long time ago, and we were working on machine learning AI systems, some of the first ones that people interacted with on a very consistent basis. And this was in the form of the quality score component of the ad rank for Google. And so, I mean, sure, it was like machine learning and these big predictive mechanisms and people were using them, but people didn't know how it worked. Like, unless you were an advertiser and dove deep into the technology, you'd be like, okay, great, I get good ad results. I don't know why. But yeah, it was machine learning. We worked quite a bit on that. And it was funny back then because we would take 6 months to update a model and then do human evaluation and then like some mistakes. And then we'd have to spend another month retraining the model. Like everything was super slow. And then and then we started using generative AI inside Optimizer before ChatGPT was even a thing. And that was more in terms of, listen, Google's asking you to give 15 headline variations for your ads. Like as a human, you sit there and you're like, oh, I've just done the 10th one. Like now I need to think of five more, right? You can give these 10 that you already have. You give it to the machine and you're like, give me five more like this and put a strong call to action in, or like tie it back to my brand, which stands for these five things. And boom, the machine spits it out. And so that was our first foray into generative. But it was interesting too what you're saying, because like even in the 1 year that most people have been thinking about generative, like it's come such a long way in terms of like Google now putting in citations and like fact checking things that we were missing in the beginning.
It's astonishing how fast it's moved. And I was talking to Fabrice Canel from Bing, who was saying the AI aspect is now pretty much rolled out, i.e. the technology is rolled out. Now there's a problem of limited resources and limited speed, and the next big jump is going to be quantum computing. And in between times, it's just going to be improving what we currently have. Would that seem to make sense to you?
Yeah, and I think that's usually the way technology goes, right? Like, so you roll out this new thing called the internet 30 years ago. We rolled this out and it's like, well, we're still iterating on how the internet works. Like, are we in web 2.0, web 3.0? Like it just keeps evolving and it keeps getting better, but the underlying technology that drives it by and large is the same. And so, yeah, I agree. And so things that I've heard is that one of the big limiting factors right now is power. Like to train GPT-5 is going to take such a massive amount of just we can think about computing power, right? But that's where the NVIDIA chips, great, we have them, they can do what they need to do. But like, how do you power a data center that's big enough that has this many NVIDIA chips? And to tie that back to a little Google anecdote, but like when I joined in 2002, they were already super secretive about data centers, but they were like, okay, you new people, you get to come and like look at the data center. And then they were explaining that like in one of the very early data centers, they had packed it so densely with chips that at one point the temperature got so high that the fire suppression system literally thought the building was on fire and it was going to activate the fire suppression system. But it was like, no, we're just like, so there's so much power, so much energy that's generating all this heat and things are working fine. But now we're taking that like 30 years later to that next level where it's like, you got to build entirely new power generators just to generate the next GPT-5.
Yeah, and in 2008, I was living in Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. It's a tiny island, kind of tropical island. And there were plans to build an underwater data center because the cooling would be really easy at the bottom of the sea, which they never did it. But you just go, wow, this is really cool. And there was a whole kind of thing around, could we build it under the sea to keep it cool and then use the sea to help power it?
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, and that's
never happened.
Technology, it did happen?
It never happened, no.
It never happened, yeah.
Oh, not no, I mean, it's
like, when the average person, and again, like the audience we're speaking to here, probably knows a lot of these like little factoids about Google and search, but like the average person who uses a search engine like has no idea how much crazy cool innovation goes into like the amount of data that we have to ingest, and then how do you make it work? And so I find, if I live in the Silicon Valley, I've lived here for over 30 years, and I just love living in this place because self-driving cars are buzzing around all the time, and like little drones, and like all the new stuff that's being built, like it's in my backyard. Like I'm literally across the street from the Google X building, which is like one of their labs. It's also Waymo is in there. So all of this new stuff, like it's right here, and I have monthly parties with like half the folks who come work at Apple, they work at Google, they work at Facebook, and it's like the type of stuff they sometimes share. It's like, wow, like we're in for a ride.
Yeah, no, I think we are definitely in for a ride. Excuse me, it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, my huge question here is: you just said that you use AI to build the ads that then feed into the AI of Google that create the ads that are play pushed on the page, which is a lovely kind of two-step process of AI feeding AI to push it out to people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the big question here is like, if I have AI generate my resume to give it to an AI that looks at my resume to decide if I get to work at some company, like what's the real purpose of humans at some point, right?
Yeah.
And that's like this really big question that I've been trying to answer since I started writing about it in 2017. And now with generative AI, I mean, it's been such a sea change in terms of the AI that we're used to. But I think a lot of the same principles still hold, right? The AI needs to be taught something. We need to put guardrails in place to make sure it doesn't start doing like crazy stuff. Because if you equate it to like planes flying in the air, like the average plane is flown by a pilot 11 minutes per flight. It can land itself.
Yeah.
Like the only reason you really have a pilot there is because most people wouldn't be comfortable getting on a plane without a pilot, right? They want a person there. And sometimes things do go wrong, like a sensor breaks and the plane thinks it's at a certain altitude, but the pilot's like, clearly we're not at that altitude. So like, let me take control because it's a high stakes thing. There's a lot of people in the back, and just like in PPC and then brand search, like these are big businesses that use it, right? You don't want to give all the controls and all the power to AI.
So I think that's a really, really important point. I mean, the human in the loop is hugely important, is always going to be hugely important. But the idea of saying, not only is the human in the loop to make sure the content and the what we're doing with it makes sense for our business, but also the idea of a pilot, and it's a great analogy, is we might just be sitting here not doing very much anymore, but we need to be here in case it goes horribly wrong.
Exactly. So that's one role. The other role that I talked about was the PPC doctor, basically. And so whether this is in PPC or SEO, it's really you're the strategist. And if you think about a doctor, one of the many things they do is they understand the medications to prescribe for certain conditions. And when you think about someone who comes to you with a brand question or someone who comes to me with a PPC question, I'm like, I know the spectrum of these. You could advertise on Bing or Google. And within Google, you have these like 10 different campaign types, and you have these four types of bid management. But how do you put them all together, right? Because there's also interactions between medicine that are going to lead to adverse results. And it's the same thing in PPC. Like if you start automated bidding, but you don't have good conversion tracking set up, then what is the automated bidding system making decisions on? Like it's going to run you off of a cliff. And so that's one of the other roles that I think just Gen AI can make a lot of these decisions. But like even now, large language models, like are you going to use the GPT-5 or 3.5 or GPT-4 Turbo, and that's just from one company? Or are you going to use Bard or Llama, the free one from Facebook, right? So figuring out which one is best at what task, and it's not just which one is best, but there's also huge differences in cost. And again, the average person, when they go to GPT, like most people pay $20 and they don't think about it more. But if you have a PPC account with 1 million keywords you want to do something Gen AI with, well, you're going to need an API. You're going to need to pay money for every request that you do.
100%. Sorry. Yeah. And we're now looking at this. We're building Calibot. Damry's building it. And he's just pushed us from GPT-4 to GPT-4 Turbo, I think. And the reaction from the team was, this is the most human bot we've ever used. And I love watching it happen because we fed it 2 million words from CaliCube. So it speaks like us and knows what we know. And it's super interesting to see how accurate it is. And he's also built a system where it can score people on how close to the CaliCube voice they are.
And so it scores people. So the AI tells the AI, which is like an almost perfect at your brand voice, is scoring people like, hey, you employee, you're not, like, you need to up your game a little bit.
Oh, it's not up your game. It's a warning. This doesn't sound like CaliCube. It's not clear that this is part of the CaliCube voice. And I actually tested it out on a text I wrote for the cartoon I made 20 years ago. And it got a score of 1 out of 5 because it was aimed at children. And I wrote it 20 years ago. And then a piece of text that I just wrote off the top of my head, and it got 5 out of 5. And it's really good and it's really cool. And what it's not so much criticizing the people working for us. It's saying, let's all stay on the same style. Keep moving in the same direction with the same facts and the same voice.
And that's one of the fun things with GPT, right? You tell it what voice to write in. And like, I have a friend and he discovered that he had to ask it to write in a more condescending voice. And then it like actually, and he's like, oh, wait, wow, I didn't realize I sounded condescending. But yeah, it's interesting.
Well, we can do experiments like that and figure out what tone of voice we've got. Maybe we're condescending. I mean, it would be really interesting to figure that out. Anyway, we've got another 10 minutes and I really wanted to know how ads are being integrated into generative AI, because one of the huge things that people have been saying is Google is about to die because it's an advertising machine and generative AI is going to kill advertising. Clearly, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not going to get Google smarter than that, right? So I think the one place to start maybe is that generative AI is not like this entirely new set of results that's all of a sudden magically coming about. It is built on semantic search, first of all. And that's not even true because like what you said, it's really just a predictor of the next word, the next logical word. So in a way, it is using all the information from the internet to predict like what's the next word that's likely to be close to this. So in a way, that's kind of like a search engine, kind of saying like, if you ask this question, then that's probably the most common answer, the most likely answer to come out.
Yeah.
But even that is influenced by fine tuning. And so again, if you train a model and I train a model and we fine tune it differently, it's going to come out with different answers because we put different weights on all the nodes in the system. So that's one thing, right? But the other thing, and maybe the simpler version is, listen, what Google and Microsoft are doing is they're saying, here's the search results page and here's my top 10 organic and my top 10 ads and my knowledge panels and whatever else goes on that page. And it says, okay, generative AI, here's this bunch of stuff. Like now you go and summarize it in a way that that Fred's going to like it, right? Because Fred, we know him as a user, so he prefers more bullet points. And Jason prefers maybe something more technical and whatever it is. Okay, so it spits it out, gets on the page. But all of that stuff still came from advertisers placing ads and ranking in the top 10 and people doing organic and ranking in the top 10. And it's just a different manifestation of that. And so it's almost like saying like, hey, Google's going to die because they just did a different layout on their search results page and they just added images to it. Oh, my God, the world's going to burn. No, it's not. Right? So.
No, 100%. And what I like about what you just said, I mean, I was talking to some people the other day about implicit blue links, because the idea of blue links are going to go away is potentially something that's going to happen. But whatever results it's giving, behind those results are the blue links. So it's always going to be implicitly there, and we need to create the content to feed those blue links, is my point of view on that. Would you agree, or am I taking it too far and blue links are simply going to disappear?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like if you take it like maybe an analogy to that is if you think about Amazon, right? So Amazon has this program where they can put the buy button from Amazon on any website. And then the fulfillment is by Amazon. And like ultimately the point is like, why does a user need to go to your website or to Amazon to purchase something? Like if you've given them a great generative answer, that's like, this is the thing that you need. And you've been convinced that that's the thing for you. Like, I actually don't want to go to somebody's website. I don't want to put in my credit card information. I just want to be like, thumbs up, ship it to my house, have it there tomorrow, right? That's all I want. So who cares about blue links at the end of the day? Like, what's the purpose of you having the blue link in the first place is to get someone to give you leads. Like, if that leads comes to you directly from Google, who cares?
Absolutely. But brilliantly put. And we still haven't talked about where they're going to put the ads in generative AI. Really quickly before that, I just wanted to show this, which is how we represent SERPs now. Knowledge on the right-hand side, the knowledge graph, web index, universal recommendations on the left-hand side. And generative AI is Google's assessment of its knowledge and its recommendations, the web index and the knowledge graph, which is a really simple way to look at it, a really easy way for us to understand how it might all fit together. And that's what I like for business people. Know, like, trust. Google knows who you are, knowledge panel. It likes who you are, recommendations on the left, the results, great. It trusts you. Its evaluation of that knowledge and those recommendations is really super positive for you. Now, how are they going to integrate ads into that?
Well, and so ads are going to fit in that, the generative AI section, they're going to become embedded, right? So just like in organic search, there's a level of commercialness of the query. So if you have a query that's really highly informational, there may be no ads on the page, and that's driven by the ad rank mechanism and the quality score system, right? But if it's a more commercial search, like somebody's clearly looking for a service provider or they need to buy something, then ads will come into that. And you're going to see generative understand that. And in the case of a commercial question, it's going to maybe front load ads a little bit more. Now, again, exactly where is there a clear distinction of like, oh, this within the knowledge, within the generative section, like is the right side ads and the left side is like the organic distillation? We don't know. Right now, it seems to be much more integrated, right? So it reads as a paragraph and you get bullet points. And then it might say, oh, did this bullet point, by the way, this is a paid link or this is a sponsored link to somewhere where you can buy this thing. But that's exactly the thing they're experimenting with. And now the other thing to keep in mind is that, in a way, generative, like the beautiful promise of generative is that I can create a million pieces of content in my own voice, with my own face, actually like saying the thing.
Or singing.
Or singing, exactly. And dancing is the next one. But exactly, so you do that because you've been able to build a GPT of yourself, like the Kali bot that you guys have built. And we've built models for Optimizer, but it knows our voice. And now we could say, like, write me 1,000 articles about whatever it is, right? And so now it becomes interesting because why do you have 1,000 different ways to say the same thing? Well, it's because there's different people who like to learn in different styles. And so each of them could get a different output. But that's really that ultimate problem. Like, and let me give you a completely different example, but it is going to tie back to this, right? So in speaking to some venture capitalists in the Valley here, like when you talk to them about what is generative AI, sort of not the end game, but what should we expect? Well, think of a version of Netflix, which is not just like content produced by Netflix, but it's a version of Netflix with just it doesn't just recommend, but it knows you so well that it knows that it should write on the fly a script about a show with superheroes with a happy ending, and ideally a couple of unicorns along the way. And then the generative video AI is going to take that script, is going to instantly produce the video, and you're going to get the content for JSON on the fly, right? And so then asking questions about like, how do we rank stuff? Like, where does it show? Like, is that still relevant in a way? I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the big question.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine today that how that would look, how it would feel. And yet a year ago, most people hadn't imagined what generative AI would look like and that you could produce these 1,000 articles. But what I find really intriguing there is, once again, Google isn't foolish enough to let its business model die because of generative AI. It's going to integrate those adverts into the generative AI itself. And the only problem I can see them truly having is that they need to clearly mark the ads for European law and presumably American law. And that might become a problem because the clarity of that indication is going to be difficult.
Yeah. And legislation always has to sort of like, nowadays it seems to follow after the fact as opposed to be ahead of the fact. Because like you said, I mean, we couldn't even imagine generative, like let alone our legislators who are still struggling with like, what is social media exactly? Senator, we run ads. I mean, these are clearly things that have to be figured out. And I think at least it's comforting to know that companies like Google, who have been pretty transparent about what is an ad, what's an organic result, and then they've distinguished between that. But it even raises questions for people like me, or like, I mean, I use generative AI now to write some of my articles, but I still heavily edit them and I use it for ideation and sort of like, okay, I need to write another paragraph about PMax. Like, I've done that 1,000 times. I don't want to do it again. Yeah. hey, GPT, can you just like spit this out and like make these 5 points? Great. But like, again, do I need to disclose now that this was written by generative? And so there's a lot of questions that just come up. And at the end of the day, the way that Google sort of positions it is usually don't think about the technology you use to achieve something, but think about the usefulness that you end up producing. If you used a ton of technology to produce something really amazing and useful, then that's great. Nobody cares that. I mean, do we go to the movies that were like, oh my God, the latest Marvel movie was like horrendous because it was way too much CGI. No, we love the CGI, right? Because it comes out with a great product at the end. So the technology is just a means to achieve the end result, which is a movie that's entertaining. It's the same in PPC and SEO.
Oh, I like that ending. That's a beautiful conclusion to the entire discussion. I'm just going to ruin that beautiful conclusion by showing this image again, which now is labeled differently, because you were talking about the idea of Google predicting what we would want. And here you have the search engine on the left-hand side, answer engine on the right-hand side, i.e. facts, and then the assistive engine where it's predicting what you need at the top, which is what generative AI will probably become. I use this all the time. You can label those in all sorts of different ways. I've got, as you said, 20 different ways to label them for 20 different audiences, depending on whom I'm talking to. Absolutely brilliant, Frederick. I have one more question for you here. How does PPC help with brand SERPs? We always ask this question because brand SERPs is our obsession. You have 1 minute.
A whole bit. Well, I mean, so the big question is always like, should I even run ads for my brand when I already have great knowledge panels and organic results? And it's another means to take control over a portion of the page. And what's so beautiful about brand PPC is that you control the message. So you can instantly update your message. If your company's repositioning or if there's a different initiative you're going after, PPC is that place where you can go in, you can instantly update your ads, you can instantly update your imagery. And these things are running in a matter of minutes, as opposed to on SEO, where you kind of have to wait for the crawl to happen. And all of these things are much faster now, but there's a little bit of an uncertainty in that. And that's where I think PPC, you know, you have your brand campaigns, make sure those are really beautifully set up. It's going to be relatively cheap compared to everything else. The CPCs tend to be much lower than your average CPC on more generic keywords. So I'm a big fan. One of the other principles here is like 1 + 1 = 3. It's sort of that additive element. You get an additional benefit, an additional boost. And like you showed these amazing pages with brand, right? Like if you own that page, people think, well, then that's like absolutely the authority. And if you leave your PPC out of it, then that's going to be like one little ding in your arbor.
That's absolutely brilliant. Great answer. Now that makes me want to invite you back for another episode in 2024 to talk just about PPC on branded search. That's going to be next year. Brilliant. Thank you, everyone, for watching. That was absolutely brilliant, Frederick. I really, really enjoyed it. Now we're going to pass the baton to next week. It's Izar Meitis. I hope I said your name right, Izar. 8 essential AI-driven strategies for business growth. Absolutely delightful. He's a lovely chap, and that's going to be super, super interesting because it's about business and making money. Frederick, please pass the baton.
Yeah, I'm passing the baton. So, Izar, Jason, very fun to talk to. Like, this is almost like having just coffee and chatting about everything that's cool. So, I'm sure you're going to enjoy it a lot. Everybody watching, Jason asked great questions. Izar, I don't know if he's got a relationship with Screaming Frog, the SEO company, but I see a little frog, tree frog thing in his necklace right there. So, I wonder what that's about. Can't quite make out what the hat is, Jason. I don't know. Do you recognize that logo? Is that a sports team?
It does look like a sports team. It could be anybody, but I will ask him next week.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Frederick, for bringing up those delightful questions that I hadn't thought of. Thank you, everyone, for watching. That was an amazing episode. You get the outro song. A quick goodbye to end the show. Thank you, Frederick.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for watching, everyone.
Thank you very much. That was wonderful.
CaliCube. It's all about your brand SERP.